welcome to a special Care Home Management Magazine podcast today. We're looking at the CQC and its proposed new five-year regulatory strategy. I'm Steve Hemsley. I'm the publishing and podcast editor at Care Home Management Magazine. And this podcast is sponsored, as always, by Care Home marketing experts, Smooth Digital, helping fill care and nursing home beds with private paying residents. Right, I'm joined by two experts today. Anne Smith, she's a non-executive director and nurse and a management consultant at Brilliant Care Solutions. And also delighted to welcome back on our podcast Neil Grant, who's partner at Gordon's Partnership Solicitors based in Guildford. So thank you both very much for joining us on this special podcast. Now, we're discussing the launch of the consultation. This is a new era of CQC regulation, some fundamental radical changes really to the way it regulates care homes in England. This was launched early January this year, and I think will close in early March. And I know we've done it in the magazine, and I know you guys are urging care homes to contribute to the consultation process. The idea is to provide a more holistic overview of care, moving away from what was quite a formal inspection model and to make it more person-centred. So Neil Grant, perhaps we can come to you first to get your thoughts on why the CQC is changing the way it regulates. I mean, what's happening here? Why is it needed? And what changes might we see?
Thanks, Steve, for the introduction. Well, yes, that's a good question. The last CQC strategy consultation was back in 2016-17, so it is due for a refresh. And CQC says it's learned a lot from the pandemic, and it's actually keen to apply the learning to how it regulates moving forward. It's quite clear that it doesn't want to go back to the old way of regulating. In actual fact, there are two consultations. There's the main one, which is the subject of this podcast, and that was issued on the 7th of January. And that sets out plans that will be embedded over the next 5 years. The consultation ends, as you've indicated, but it ends on the 4th of March at 5 p.m, no less. There's also a shorter consultation that they published on the 26th of January, which has some specific proposals about regulating NHS hospitals and GP practices. As far as adult social care is concerned, the relevant part is about introducing this year a more flexible and responsive regulatory framework, particularly around reviewing and updating ratings. And in actual fact, that features in the main consultation as well. The second consultation finishes at 5 p.m. on the 23rd of March. There's a great deal of rhetoric and very little detail, really, in the main consultation, which will make it difficult for the public to respond. But as a lawyer, I'd like to highlight a couple of things. First of all, there's a focus now, a change really, towards what I would describe as enhanced technology-enabled monitoring and assessment, which may include targeted or focused inspections if they're deemed necessary. But otherwise, regulation will largely be a desktop-led exercise. So what we are witnessing is the demise of the planned comprehensive inspection linked to reviewing ratings. So instead, ratings will be capable of being changed without an inspection. That's a major difference. Although it's not clear how this is going to work in practice. CQC says there'll be a flexible approach to ratings based on feedback, which will be introduced later in the year. We'll have to see what they say. A second issue is the widening of the definition of a provider of care. So you can tell this is a very legal issue, and that's why it interests me. And that may include registering parent companies or potentially management companies. But again, it's really unclear what the criteria will be around that, and indeed whether or not a change in legislation is required.
So from what you're saying there, Neil, is this the right time for such a radical shift in methodology?
Well, I sort of question really whether it is the right time. There's so much uncertainty out there at the moment, as well as unique pressures that we all know about. CQC will say it needs to be flexible in the face of these new challenges. But really, the way the consultation document reads, it suggests that the fundamentals of regulation are robust and they're working well, and CQC is in a good place to move forward. It's a very optimistic assessment of its own capabilities and the power of technology to transform the way in which it works to make it an outstanding, even a world-class regulator. But I sort of question that, really, because we come across many situations where regulation doesn't work particularly effectively. What I'd like to do, actually, just very quickly, is just summarise what the main themes are before I pass on to Anne, mm-hmm. who's going to deal with them in more detail. The first theme, people and communities. The second one is smarter regulation. The third one is safety through learning. And the fourth one is accelerating improvement.
Okay, thank you, Neil. So, Anne, turning to you then, what appears to be the positives in the proposal and what are the concerns?
As Neil said, there are four themes, and this is all and embedded within those four themes are the desire to bring health and care systems together to work more effectively and to reduce inequalities. And I think it's really good that CQC is looking at this. I think they should be applauded for putting equality into the centre of what they do. And we do know that there needs to be a sustained focus in taking health and social care forward to work together. And I think it's good that CQC is looking at themselves as well and how they can work and what they can do to improve. So if I could take the four themes, looking at people in communities, the main drive here for CQC is people's experiences and really focusing on their empowerment. And they're reiterate again and again that what people say really matter and that they will act on what people tell them. And I think the other point that comes out here quite clearly is the emphasis on system performance and the ability for service users to move between services to their advantage. There is a lot of focus on feedback, and that would be my concern. The theme is very reliant on feedback, and all manners of sources of gathering feedback are mentioned, but that's very burdensome, I think, to the provider. It could be. As with any consultation document, it is written in the future tense, but there is a sense that they haven't really worked out how they will get that feedback yet. And feedback can be quite subjective. And we all know that the most vocal can be disproportionately represented. They can be almost self-selecting. And I would question what form the feedback will take, because things like written feedback can be very limiting. And the missed opportunity, I think, of non-verbal communication is a concern, because there's so much to learn from the frailer service user by observing them and seeing what they're trying to communicate non-verbally. What you can see from observing them, it would be lost if we just rely on feedback from afar. And I think, just to expand on that, I think they're missing other techniques to gather information, that you would do at an inspection, like the direct observations I've mentioned, but also that resident staff interaction and the environment and the sixth sense you get when you walk around and think that something might not be right. So I think inspection has always been about using all your senses. So I would question why CQC are limiting those. CQC themselves says that they'll take the feedback and they'll give it the correct weighting. But I think, in summary for this theme, that they will there'll be gaps in the information they gather if they focus purely on feedback. However, I think CQC may argue not, because the second theme is smarter regulation. And this is all about CQC being more flexible and dynamic. And Neil was mentioning this earlier, really. It's very important that CQC keep pace with change in health and care. It's changed enormously, hasn't it, over the last few months with the pandemic. And so they want a more flexible, targeted approach where quality will be assessed continuously by using continuous knowledge, really. So when they do go in, they will argue that they'll use more direct time. They'll have more time to spend directly with residents rather than gathering information in offices and back rooms. So I think it's good to say that CQC are looking at their risk management approach, which, again, is a positive. And they plan to share that information they gather with other organisations. So it will help us all learn. They're also expanding their definition on who the provider will be. So they may well include, I think, parent companies and other care providers not yet regulated. And I think over time, as Neil intimated, ratings will evolve and reports will probably get shorter. And CQC promise a clearer definition of quality. The major disadvantage for me is that comprehensive inspection will go. And I would question, therefore, where is the mechanism to establish a baseline and have a wider view of the service? By not having a comprehensive inspection, it runs the risk that risks themselves may be missed if the whole is not scrutinised. There's a real potential, I think, that there may be a focus on limited issues. And I think many care providers will have seen how multi-agency involvement on one or two subjects allows the whole thing to run away with itself and limits the ability to look at the wider arena. There is emphasis on sharing information. It comes out in this consultation quite a lot. So there is a question about GDPR. And, you know, if we're going to talk about smarter regulation, there must be more training for inspectors. So that they there must be a significant training element. The question mark is, will inspectors actually even retain their title if they're not in fact inspecting as much? So in summary for these two themes, I think my concern would be the limited use of information gathering toolkit. It would be a lack of baseline inspections. And I'm concerned that if CQC are going to cast its net wider, it's going to be more difficult to be able to achieve effective regulation.
Yeah, thank you, Anne. I mean, Neil, to you then on those two themes, would you agree with what Anne's saying about this reliance on feedback? And that might be a bit dangerous because it's so subjective. And that other point on the smarter regulation, will that lead to maybe less comprehensive inspections as it's trying to be smarter? What are your thoughts?
There is a concern. I mean, obviously, CQC does say that they'll transform how they capture, use and analyse people's feedback. Obviously, it's not just service users. In reality, it's going to be wider than that. It could be staff members, former staff members, family members, relatives, of course, as well. There's no real detail how they'll do that, as Anne has actually sort of identified. Feedback, of course, always needs to be treated seriously, but in many cases, it does need to be tested. And clearly, in the past, the inspection has been the classic way of doing that, because if it's not tested, it is just unsubstantiated hearsay, and it may well be unfounded. Of course, you have whistleblowers. They may be genuine and raise issues, but sometimes they can be malicious. In terms of people and communities, I like the recognition that it's not enough just to look at individual services. CQC have got plans to regulate local areas. The question, I suppose, in my mind is, will CQC really have the power to make change across areas? We'll have to see. For example, will CQC really confront local authority commissioners if there are strange decisions being made around funding? So, for example, a client of mine, a Doncare provider, has just been offered the same rate in 2021, an hourly rate, as they were 10 years ago. Would CQC challenge that and say, clearly, that's perverse, that's not reasonable? In terms of smarter regulation, I think it's positive, the move to real-time regulation. We all know that inspection is only a snapshot in time. I suppose my concern is, how realistic is real-time regulation when you're dealing with thousands of fragmented care services at different stages of development as far as technology is concerned? What is the quality of the data in CQC's possession about social care? Will it be a more robust form of regulation if the periodic comprehensive inspection of all services is abandoned? And I have my doubts about that. I'm pretty damn sure that things will be missed if they abandon the comprehensive inspection. So those are my comments on those two areas. I think Anne now is going to carry on and deal with themes 3 and 4.
Yes, the theme 3 is safety through learning, and I really like this theme. CQC have identified that SAFE is their most commonly failed CLOE. Therefore, an emphasis on establishing a safety culture is really important and should be applauded. And there's real emphasis in this theme about taking action. And there's mention also, regardless of seniority of role, which I think will be an interesting development. They also be looking at learning culture across the board, but also looking at themselves as well in terms of their health and safety knowledge. They recognise they need to improve their expertise in health and safety. I think providers will be pleased to see that they've retained lessons learnt. It's something that I think providers have found very useful in improving what we do. I do have some concerns. The question mark that I have really is there's a lot of information in here about support and collaboration. And I just wonder where support will end and enforcement actions will start. There's no mention of management either, but failures in SAFE CLOE are frequently identified as a failure in the well-led CLOE, i.e. in management. And there's nothing in this strategy document about management, really. And I think it would be helpful if they were more in step with management. So there would be a greater effectiveness in improving care quality and safety. The final theme, the fourth theme, is accelerating improvement. And this has been a consistent theme for CQC for some time, but they seem to be really projecting this in this theme. They see themselves really driving improvement through their leadership and advocacy, really identifying priorities. And one of the things they will be doing is looking at the definition of good, because they recognise that expectation has changed and has got higher over the years. There's again emphasis about collaboration and support, enabling sector-wide improvements. And the focus on the continuous improvement plan remains. So, but they're also talking about including workshops and further guidance and direction and tools to support the provider in continuously improving. So I think that's very positive. They also say they'll provide support with self-assessment and benchmarking data. And they're really keen on innovation as they are now, but there's greater emphasis, I think, in this document. And this will be encouraged, but they'll also monitor it, because I think they obviously know there's risk when you go into uncharted territory. There are a few concerns. They are correct, I think, in the definition of good has changed. I worked as a regulator in the years when we had minimum standards, then we moved to essential and then on to fundamental. And the indication now from CQC is the bar will be set higher. And this is driven in part by expectation. But I'm not sure what expectation will be when we come out of this pandemic. It might be more clinically focused, I feel. And there's little in this consultation paper about care or clinical care to any great detail. How can CQC enable and support services who want to improve whilst retaining their core regulatory role and therefore their enforcement function? And I worry that this isn't addressed clearly. My other concern would be this lack of recognition that management within care homes plays a major role in ensuring improvements are both made and sustained. And I think there needs to be some mirroring in between regulation and management to ensure that we reach the same result of best care and safe care.
Yeah, no, thank you. And Neil, I mean, you can respond on those two themes there. Interesting about identifying priorities now, what's good, this raising, setting the bar sort of higher, and maybe being out of step with management. Really interesting points Anne's making there. What do you think about these last two themes?
I suppose I'll just pick up one thing, and this is the idea really about CQC focusing on support, but really it's actually an enforcement body as well. And how can you square those positions? I think it's very difficult. I mean, one of the things that we've noticed since April 2015 is the increase in criminal prosecution, investigations and prosecutions by CQC in relation to health and safety matters relating to service users in regulated services. That's anecdotally, there are supposed to be about sort of 2,000 investigations ongoing at the moment. And so this idea that CQC is going to be sort of soft and cuddly, as it were, and work with providers to improve things, I mean, how do you square that with the fact that they actually are there to take enforcement action if they feel that individuals may have been harmed or placed at risk of significant harm? In terms of accelerating improvement, I mean, is it the right time to be setting the bar higher at a time of national crisis when many services out there are really, really struggling because of what has actually happened over the last 12 months? It is positive, of course, that they're talking about national sector-wide improvement coalitions. But again, how is CQC going to ensure that that support goes into adult social care? And perhaps even more importantly, who is going to actually fund it? So those are some of the points I think I would raise around those two areas.
Yeah, thank you, Neil. So it is a very ambitious change we're talking about here. I mean, Neil, do you think CQC will achieve these ambitions, and would it be able to keep true to purpose?
Well, I very much hope it does deliver on its ambitions. It's an important national regulator, and its purpose is public protection. I mean, that's the primary purpose. Of course, yes, there's improvement as well, but fundamentally it's about safety. And also, just looking at the title, the Care Quality Commission, it's about the quality of care. And really, to sort of pronounce and judge on that, you actually need to observe it, to go out and see how that care is being delivered. CQC is pinning its faith on high quality technology. But as I say, my worry is that things will be missed if comprehensive inspections are abandoned, or certainly feature a lot less than they did before the pandemic. And what we do know is that services are sort of patchy across the country in terms of technology. Some use it incredibly well, while others are still largely paper-based. And again, this worry is that CQC may start to sort of spread itself too thinly and not deliver on its primary purpose. Are we seeing a lighter touch system of regulation? Well, they talk about self-assurance, for example, in the consultation document. That's been put forward in the past in the early days of CQC, and that didn't seem to sort of work very well at all. And they talk about accreditation without really giving any detail about what they mean. And finally, I suppose, what I think is it's important that there's value for money in terms of what CQC do, because most of the funding actually comes from the fees of providers. But if CQC have got these grandiose plans to regulate local areas, systems, and so on and so forth, should providers be paying for that? I mean, surely that should come from the national purse, I think, from the department, if these wider sort of regulatory sort of functions are going to be discharged by CQC. So I hope they will be true to their purpose and succeed. We'll just have to see.
Right. Thank you. I mean, Anne, on that point, I mean, Neil picked up a couple of things there about whether CQC is going to offer value for money now, ambition versus quality of care, and the fact that the services are patchy and different around the country. How do you see this? Is CQC maybe being too ambitious?
I agree with everything Neil has just said, really. And, you know, looking at the true purpose, you know, CQC defines itself as an independent regulator with a clear purpose. I think the independence is in question if they're going to be getting information from a number of sources other than directly themselves. A clear purpose, I think they've work on their hands now with the strategy consultation to define that clear purpose. In describing themselves, they then go on to say that they're to ensure health and social care services provide people with safe, effective, high quality care and encourage services to improve. We can't argue that they don't encourage services to improve. They really do that, and they really do enable that to move forward. But I think the concern I have is this focus, again, as Neil said, on high-quality care, where I can't see the measurements in there in terms of high-quality care. And that would be my concern, because I think in these proposals, those should be defined, really, because care, after all, is at the heart of safety and quality.
You're listening to the Care Home Management Magazine podcast with Steve Hemsley.
Indeed you are, and welcome back to our CQC special. Thank you, Anne. Yeah, I mean, providers will obviously share your concerns. What are the next steps for providers, do you think, so that they can respond to what's happening, respond to the consultation, prepare for the changes that are coming, and how do they manage what's going on, re-inspections, in the interim?
Well, I firstly would like to recognise how busy the operators are at the moment. You know, the pandemic is still with us, and life is very difficult within care homes and extremely hectic. You know, our staff are, as I describe it, battle-worn and weary, really, and they're doing a fantastic job. So what I'd really like to say is, you know, please try and find some time to respond. It's really important that we get the regulatory service that we need and able to protect our service users and ensure quality of care and safety. So there's various ways of responding. They can go online, they can email CQC, development at cqc.org.uk, and indeed they can post as a free post address on the CQC website. And the other thing I'd quite like to bring to everybody's attention is that there are actually some CQC webinars on these four themes on YouTube, so they can be tracked down, and only about 10 minutes, 15 minutes long, so they're not hugely time consuming. I think in terms of preparing for change and managing in the interim, I would suggest that organisations review their vision and values, particularly in relation to human rights, inequality, and how they work with others. I think we need to ensure residents and our service users in general continue to be central to everything we do, and that this is evidenced. And just a few other points, really. I think in preparing for the change, do have a look at your feedback mechanisms. Look at how you listen to residents. Look at how you use your tech. You know, I know providers look at surveys and meetings and one-to-ones, but I think probably where to focus most on is the care and the care reviews. I think it's really important that as care providers, we evaluate with the service users the care that we provide them, so we can really get their feedback through that mechanism. And also, I really applaud managers to walk the floor so they can use those information gathering skills I've mentioned before to really get an idea of what each resident is feeling. So they get the feedback first, really, and we can be proactive to their needs. I would look at your safety culture, really recommend that to all providers. I look at your policy statement and obviously your procedures and risk assessments, but also how you manage health and safety. Do you have a health and safety meeting, or does health and safety meeting going on every meeting agenda? And again, put health and safety back into the centre of care planning. Look at your learning culture. Look at whether your lessons learned mechanism works in terms of disseminating it to staff. And, it's important that providers' quality assurance systems are robust. But I think probably most of all, it's important to have a working continuous improvement plan, one that really demonstrates that continuous improvement and that the provider is moving in the right direction at all times.
Yeah, Neil, I mean, it is important, isn't it? I mean, care staff, managers, everyone is, to use Anne's words, they're battle-worn and weary at the moment. But it's so important, isn't it, that providers do respond and prepare for what's going on here?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, really, I suppose the message from my reading of the consultation document is go digital. Those services in particular that are based around papers, paper records, they may struggle somewhat because CQC says that it's intending to introduce digital channels that they say will make it easier for providers and partners to work collaboratively with CQC. So because we think much more is going to be done desktop, there's going to have to be this shift, I think. And obviously, a lot of that's happened over the last 12 months in many respects, but I think that's only going to intensify over the next 5 years. And I suppose another focus, and this is really, I suppose, post-pandemic, is really the clear need for services to have an external focus with strong community links. And that's obviously been a real challenge during the pandemic. That's not been possible in many instances. But CQC are very concerned about closed cultures. And I think looking forward in time over the next 3, 4, 5 years, there's going to be real emphasis in terms of looking at cultures within organisations and indeed possibly even rating cultures as part of the regulatory process.
Yeah, thank you, Neil. Another question I wanted to discuss with you is how children's homes are regulated on the basis of twice yearly inspections. And I just wondered whether there is any justification for saying that adults should be regulated differently with no set schedule of routine inspections. What do you think, Neil?
Well, the answer to that is no. I don't think there is a justification. I could probably move on to the next question, but I better say something, I suppose. Yeah. The reality here, Steve, is there's been a sort of continuum, really, an erosion of inspection in relation to care homes going back over the last 15 years. Up until April 2006, care homes used to be inspected twice a year. That was under statute, and that had been in place for a long, long while. And then it changed to a minimum of every 3 years that they had to inspect care homes. And the justification, well, I think probably cutting red tape, and I suppose the cost as well. But what it did do, it led to a massive reduction in the number of inspections of care homes over the next 5 years. And lo and behold, you know, then we had sort of Winterbourne View in 2011. Now, I appreciate that wasn't a care home, that was an assessment and treatment centre. But the point I'm making is that there's been this erosion of inspection for a while. And now CQC seem to be saying, well, in actual fact, the comprehensive planned inspection is going. So I find it very difficult to comprehend why you should have two a year for children, which I completely agree with, but you don't even have a schedule of comprehensive inspections. And any inspections that will happen will be focused or targeted at certain sort of areas, possibly to observe care or possibly to get information that might otherwise not be available. But that holistic, that full inspection, I think, is absolutely critical, personally.
Yes. And Anne, what are your thoughts?
Well, I agree with Neil. I'm not sure what the justification might be. I'm definitely in favour of twice yearly comprehensive inspections. As a former regulator, I found them invaluable because there's so much to learn from them. You know, you're in direct contact with more with the end user, and you can speak to staff, you can observe how management works, and it really maximizes, I think, the information gathering opportunities over and above the tech that now is available. I think you need a baseline from which to work from, and having only targeted inspection removes that baseline, I think, which I think is a disadvantage to both the regulator and the provider.
Thank you, Anne. Neil, now, one of the important things of any inspection, isn't it, is to be able to challenge the findings. How will providers and managers be able to challenge CQC under the new arrangements? There's always been the classic means of challenge has been factual accuracy comments on draft inspection reports. I mean, providers might be worried about what this will mean in terms of being able to challenge.
Well, that's a good question. I think, and it's unclear. I mean, there's nothing in the consultation document about the rights of providers to be able to challenge judgments, decisions of CQC that flow from this new assessment framework that CQC are intending to introduce. An assessment, a performance assessment of a service, is not an inspection. It has been linked to inspections until now, but CQC say, well, actually, we're going to divorce, we're going to not have that connection anymore. So you will have assessments of services that will lead to change of ratings, and they could go up or they could go down. I think the issue for me is, you know, what processes are they going to introduce to ensure that what they do is reasonable and proportionate, and allows the provider to come back with a response if they're not happy with what has actually sort of happened. A lot of it, I think, will come down to actually being open and transparent. Now, CQC obviously sort of require that of providers, quite rightly so. We've got the duty of disclosure and so on. But it's important as well that CQC are open in this regard, because they become less open over the last few years. They don't give inspection notes out, for example. That's one of the things I go on about all the time. And the full evidence trail actually isn't disclosed. So, you know, we have a situation where reports are issued which contain the best available evidence, but not all the evidence. And it seems to me that if I was running a care home, I'd like to see all the evidence that came out of an inspection of one of my services, or an assessment for that matter. So I think full transparency, disclosure is absolutely imperative, particularly with this new framework. But you have to have in place a review mechanism which allows the provider to be able to respond and challenge, because CQC do many things well, but they also make mistakes as well. So there needs to be that opportunity to respond, to ensure that what actually is put in the public domain is actually accurate and it fairly reflects the service that's being regulated.
Thank you, Neil. And just final question, Anne, to you about, I mean, you've both spoken a lot about what you support in these new arrangements, what you have concerns about. What would you do differently if you were the CQC?
Thank you for that question. Well, first of all, I'd say what I would agree with, which is resolving inequalities and promoting human rights and enabling services to work together well. And I really like, as I said before, the focus on safety and learning. CQC in their paper does recognise that service users have multiple long-term conditions that need a working system to support them. But what they don't do, there's really very little focus on care itself in the consultation document. And I'd want to see more focus on care and care outcomes. I mean, to be honest, and more specifically, I'd perhaps be looking at achieving quality and supporting activities of living and specific clinical conditions. I think physical health and emotional well-being are now a much greater priority as a result of the pandemic. And I think the other important thing I'd like to do a bit differently, and what I've mentioned already, is I'd like to see more alignment with the management and the management systems in use within the care homes.
Thank you. Neil, and if you were put in charge of the CQC tomorrow, what would you do differently?
Well, there we are. What a thought, eh? If I suddenly woke up tomorrow and I was the chief executive of CQC. I mean, I do. They've got a hell of a job. I mean, it's not an easy job that they do, and people don't tend to thank them, do they? So, but yes, I mean, but looking at what I would do, I suppose if I'd been in charge at this point in time, I think I would have wanted to consult on a strategy setting out far clearer proposals. And that's probably the lawyer in me to an extent. But the feeling I'm left with, I think, really is that CQC haven't really thought through these proposals in any depth. And they are sort of a set of proposals, concepts, which will no doubt be taken forward and put into focus groups or whatever. But it just seems to me it is very thin on detail here about what may actually happen practically. The devil is always in the detail, as they say. And I think I would be cautious as chief executive of CQC of adopting a tech-driven approach to regulation. And why is that? Well, in essence, really, I think regulation is a social process. And what I would want to do is focus on getting in place better trained, qualified and experienced inspectors. They do a valuable job. They need to be supported. So rather than paying Microsoft millions and millions of pounds, I would actually pay inspectors more. And I'd like to sort of quote, really, from a study in 2018 from the University of Manchester and the King's Fund on CQC regulation. And it reads as follows. It says, for the regulator, it seems their credibility, authority and effectiveness are only as good as the people who make and sustain regulatory relationships with providers. Many of the decisions that CQC staff are called upon to make are complex and require expertise in the clinical domain, as well as a sophisticated understanding of organisations and their development. We think that investment in those staff and in the processes of recruitment, training and professional development is particularly important. And I would back that up. I would agree with that wholeheartedly. I'd like to see an inspection every year, I think. One inspection every year with flexibility as to how the form of that inspection might take. But as a minimum, it really ought to cover safety, the observation of care delivery, infection prevention and control, because obviously that's going to continue to be a major issue. And then finally, sort of leadership and management. So that's what I would like. If I was in charge, that's what I'd be doing.
That's great advice, Neil. And Anne, thank you very much. Well, that's all we've got time for. So thank you to my panel. That was a very interesting conversation about what's going to happen with the CQC consultation and arrangements. You've been listening to Anne Smith, who's non-executive director and nurse and management consultant at Brilliant Care Solutions, and Neil Grant, partner at Gordon's Partnership Solicitors based in Guildford. This is the Care Home Management Magazine podcast on CQC regulation, the way forward, with me, Steve Hemsley, and sponsored by Smooth Digital, helping fill care and nursing home beds with private paying residents. And just quickly, don't forget that the CQC's consultation does stay open for comment until 5 p.m. on March the 4th. And details of how to respond are on the CQC's website. That's cqc.org.uk/get involved. In the meantime, we'll be back with more podcasts over the next few weeks. So thank you for listening. Look after yourselves, and we'll speak to you soon.